Hello, everyone. We're glad you found us, and welcome to our podcast at antiqueauctionforum.com. We hope you find this show entertaining and informative.
This podcast is sponsored by WorthPoint. Find out what your antiques are worth at worthpoint.com. Hi, everyone. Martin Willis with podcast number 95 on toys. Welcome to the Antique Auction Forum. We have a couple of announcements. First of all, we are now on Stitcher, where you can listen to us on your smartphone instead of your iPod, if you wish. Our message board is now open. We are also getting our show transcribed by antiquesnearme.com. So below the podcast, after it's up a few days, you will see a link to the show transcription just below the podcast at antiqueauctionforum.com. And today's show is about collecting antique toys with an avid collector who I met that is fascinating, with a very large toy collection. Also, we have an upcoming guest, Noel Barrett. You've seen him many times in the Antiques Roadshow. He will be on our show coming up fairly soon. Noel Swift, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And you're in Freeport, Maine, and you're a toy collector. And where did you come from originally? Ireland?
Yes, I was born in Southern Ireland, and I moved here 20 years ago. Then I left and came back. So I say I've been here 20 years.
Uh-huh. And how long have you been collecting toys?
I've been collecting toys 20 years, probably.
Since you've been here?
Yes, sir.
And yeah. What did you start collecting? What was your initial... what got you started?
A pedal car for my oldest daughter.
A pedal car. Okay, what was that? What was it, an antique one?
It was a...
Or vintage, I should say.
No, it was a 61 T-Bird.
Oh, nice.
And... I bought it at a tag sale in Long Island, New York, brought it back to Maine, and got it restored for my daughter for Christmas.
So this is what started the whole thing?
That's what started the whole... Never had an inkling that I would be a toy collector before that.
And how many pedal cars did you collect?
I had over 200 at one time.
Oh, goodness. Wow. So you must have been known as the guy that people would go to if they were selling a pedal car.
Yes. I mean, people knew that I was totally enamored by pedal cars. I loved everything about them. I loved the mechanics. I loved the detail on some of the older ones, the functionality. Some were just two flat pieces of rod that were attached to a pedal and you pushed forward. And there was for lack of a better explanation, like a cam system on the back axle, which mm-hmm. would propel the car. Then the more sophisticated ones actually had a, not more sophisticated, but the more expensive ones, actually had a chain drive. You know, it was an enclosed bicycle chain. That was adapted to fit and to
any
work.
Type of braking system with that, or you just kind of stopped
your
pedaling
feet.
Your feet, yeah, like Fred Flintstone.
Exactly.
Feet. Yeah. Yes. Wow. So you got into that, and tell our listening audience how many toys you have collected so far.
I have over 4,000 toys altogether.
Over 4,000.
Yes.
That's quite amazing. That's what you call an avid collector, and that's why you're on the show.
Thank you.
What are the vintages you focus on, or what's the array of vintages, I should ask?
My love is Japanese tin space toys, and they run the gambit from late 40s to the mid-70s. They're still making them now, but they're nothing like they used to be. So that's my love. That's my passion.
Uh-huh. And that robots as well?
Robots, rockets, flying saucers, space vehicles, you name it, I've got it.
And it's very collectible.
Yes, sir. Yeah, they're very collectible, and some of them are extremely valuable. I mean, extremely valuable.
Is that your most valuable segment of toy collecting?
Yes. Mm-hmm. To give you, for instance, everybody's familiar with the Sears and Roebuck Christmas toy catalog. I believe it was 1964 or 65. Sears had it was called an atomic robot. Mm-hmm. And basically it looked like a bullet. Looked like a bullet head. And it was made by a Japanese toy company by the name of Cragston. And it was in the catalog. And like I said, it looked like a bullet, and it has two little red feet. And when you turn the power on the battery toy on, basically there's a few little flashing bulbs, and the feet move up and down as it moves forward or backwards. It's an amazing looking toy to me, but if I was a child and I got this for Christmas, I would have got bored with it very quick. So consequently, it wasn't a big seller. They actually pulled it. They actually pulled it from their toy catalog. That toy in 1964 or 65 sold for a couple of bucks. If you're lucky enough to find an original, it's in excess of 100,000 now.
100,000?
Yes.
I had no idea.
Yes.
I would have had no idea about that. So are Japanese themselves heavily involved in collecting Japanese toys?
Yes. Yes. It's funny you should say that or ask that. There is I met this gentleman. His name is Toshika Kitahara. And
he's not Japanese, is he?
And he is probably one of the most brilliant men as far as being educated in any animated toy that I've ever met. And I met him at a toy show in Boston about 15 years ago. And we were both looking at the same toy exhibit, and he commented to me through an interpreter, you know, that he had this toy with the original box. And at the time, I thought he was just another Japanese tourist looking for old Japanese toys. Well, come to find out, he's probably the largest collector of vintage Japanese toys in the world.
Wow.
He has three museums in Japan that I know of. He
really?
Has one in Osaka, Japan, which is amazing. He has one in Tokyo, which is breathtaking, and then another one in Kyoto, which is full of pre-World War II Japanese tin toys, animated toys. And next to the Germans, the Japanese are the best at making animated toys. Germans being first, Japanese being second. Some of the toys that I have that are, some of them are clockwork, some of them are battery operated. But they can make on one clockwork motor with rods and rudimentary cam systems in the toy, they can make one clockwork motor on that toy do up to four functions. And with the battery operated toys, it's even more. And they're just amazing. And their detail is, it's fantastic.
Well, you know, I would have never thought of, just being an uneducated person out there that has been in the auction business, I would have never thought, I mean, I heard about Japanese robots before, that they're very collectible. But I had no idea that they are such precision makers.
Oh, they are fantastic. I mean, even some of their friction toys, there is a friction, it's called a robot car, and it looks like a looks like a late 50s, early 60s gullwing Mercedes. Hmm. And from the friction motor, from the car being propelled along on the friction motor, it's got four functions that this toy will do.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. They are amazing.
I mean, so the friction motor, just for someone that doesn't know, is the thing you push.
Yes.
You push and then it keeps
yes.
rolling.
Exactly.
Keeps moving.
Yes. It's basically works like a clockwork motor, but instead of having a spring, it's all done with there's a large weighted flywheel that actually takes the motion from you pushing the vehicle
yeah.
And translates that into making all of the other gears within the toy motor work.
Yeah.
And it's quite amazing when you take one apart and see how it works.
Now, what is the earliest toy that you have?
The earliest toy I have is it's a German toy, and it's a it looks like a live steam boiler and pistons and everything, but it's clockwork, and that's from 1812.
Wow. And where did you come across that?
I got it in an attic of a house.
Oh, everyone likes to hear that story.
I in my other life, I was a telephone technician installer, and I was pulling some wires in an old house that had been converted into office condos, and had made a comment to the owner that I needed to get up into the attic because didn't want any cable exposed. But I made the comment to him that anything I found up there, seeing he said that the attic was cleaned out, anything I found was mine. And he said, sure. Well, I was pulling the cable past the second chimney, and I looked down, and it looked like a Dutch oven built into the side of the chimney. And me being nosy, I looked down and looked in, and there was two toys in it.
Jeez.
And I took them out and climbed down out of the attic and told the owner, look what I found. And he started laughing. He thought I'd brought them in with me. And I said, no, I actually found them up there. And he said, well, they're yours. And I
wow.
thanked him.
And you collected toys and you found toys?
Yes.
The odds of that happening.
Exactly.
Jeez.
And especially after me saying to him, anything I find up there is mine.
I bet you did that from that point on.
It was purely circumstantial.
How do you find your toys?
I will go to flea markets, consignment stores, tag sales, yard sales, anywhere I can. Junk stores for parts, anywhere I can think that there may be, you know,
yeah,
play gold.
Right. Do you ever go to auctions?
Not so much anymore, because, you know, my finances are curtailed a bit with, you know, two children in college.
Oh, yes. So. Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah. Have you refined your collecting habits?
Yes, very much so. When I first started collecting, with the pedal cars, the odds of finding one in pristine condition are slim to none.
Hmm.
But with smaller toys, people played with them, put them away, played with them, put them away, and the odds are that, you know, and it's not the odds that they are out there in pristine condition. Excuse me. When I first started collecting small toys, I would buy a toy that wasn't as perfect as it should be, simply because of the rarity or the good deal that I got on this particular toy. But then when you start to research and figure out what it would cost to restore the toy, you're truly better off, unless it's an extremely rare piece, you're truly better off keeping the money and waiting for something a little bit better.
Yeah.
Everybody, in anything that you collect, it's condition. Mm-hmm. And very, very much so with toys. The toy collectors are probably the most purest of collectors I've ever seen. I mean, they Wow. want every single thing perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I've morphed into one of those people. Mm-hmm. The toys I collect now, or the toys that I try and buy now, I try and buy the best piece that I can.
Yeah. I brought this up in this podcast before, is a lot of times it's better for someone to buy one really good item than 10 mediocre items. And I'm sure that's the same in toys.
Exactly. If the lithograph is great, if it's a mechanical toy and the exterior of the toy is in really nice condition, but the motor is broken, not working, seized, then I'll buy it because I will replace and repair gears, cogs. Mm-hmm. I bought a jeweler's lathe about 10 years ago, and I'm kind of self-taught. At first, it was I threw away more pieces that I tried to make than I actually succeeded in making. But over the years, I've kind of refined my repair and manufacturing skills with my lathe, and I also have a it's kind of like a small milling machine attachment that goes with it. It's an amazing piece in its own right. It's a miniature lathe. Hmm. That was you. It's a watchmaker's lathe.
Yeah, I've seen them before. Mm-hmm.
And so I've made parts. So if I find a toy where the motor is bad, or but the rest of the toy is in really, really good shape, then I'll buy it. And I truly love the challenge of bringing the toy back to life.
Sure. Now, we talked earlier about restoration. Is there someone like on an early tin toy that is known in the country that you would trust to restore a tin toy as far as surface goes?
Sure. There's a company, I believe they're in Wisconsin, and they're called Classic Tin Toy.
Mm-hmm.
And they make some of the best reproduction pieces. And I don't want to scare people away. You give them a toy, and for, let's say, it's a mechanical toy with of a figure where the arms or the legs move and one of the limbs is missing, they will custom make that arm or leg or whichever the limb is missing, head, torso, and they will make it to look like the original piece. They will even age the lithograph, and they have a process of aging the lithograph to match your toy.
So they'll even lithograph a piece?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is amazing.
Classic, I believe it's Classic Tin Toy out of Wisconsin.
So let's talk, I sound like a broken record because every podcast almost I talk about fakes. And so let's talk a little bit about, because I know, for instance, in the cast iron world, there's tons of fakes out there. But what about tin toys? Are there fakes as well?
They are becoming more prevalent. There never used to be that many, but because of a toy's rarity, that they are starting to reproduce fakes that are as near as, damn it, as good as the original.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. So what would you tell the novice collector that wanted to buy something right as far as buying safely?
Do your homework. Research, read, and research some more. I subscribe to a monthly magazine. It's called Antique Toy World, and it's basically my Bible. I've been subscribed to it for 15 plus years, and I have every issue I've ever gotten, and I go back to them. A perfect example of using my Antique Toy World magazines is there's an old store. It's no longer an antique store. It used to be on Route 1 in Freeport, and I would frequent there, and the gentleman knew I collected toys, and I would go in, I'd buy parts, and he'd always had something. I went in there one time, and I asked him if he had anything, and he said, yes, I have a lithograph race car and an old aluminum race car, and I won $150 for both pieces. I looked at the tin litho race car. It was gorgeous, but there was a wheel missing. And I brought this to his attention, and he said, that's why the two pieces are $150. If the wheel was there, it would be a lot more. So
typical dealer's answer.
So I asked him if I could have a closer look at the aluminum car, and he brought it out, and my heart almost stopped. It was I didn't know the year at the time, but I knew it was a tether car. And what a tether car is, it's a gas-powered model car that on the side of the body has two little extensions of the frame with holes in them where you would attach two wires, and those two wires went to a nail that was knocked into the ground, and this car would go round in a circle, just like a guideline airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd seen them. I'd always wished that I could get one, but I could never afford one. Well, this came, and I paid the money, and I went home. I knew I'd seen the car before, but I couldn't remember where. And then after some thinking and recollecting, I remembered it was in one of my Antique Toy World books,
but
magazines.
You have 1,000 of them.
I have hundreds of them. I spent about 4 hours going through, because there was a gentleman from Florida that would advertise almost in the middle of the magazine every month, and looking for these particular gas-powered tether cars. And so I knew exactly where I had to go to in the magazine, but I had hundreds of them that I had to look through. And I found the car, and it was identical. It was the car I bought was identical to the one in the picture. And I called the gentleman that put the ad in, and explained what I had, and he offered me $2,500 sight unseen over the phone.
Wow, that's a nice find.
So I still had the car, and yes, getting back to your original question, research some more, and if you have any doubt, you know, don't be afraid to ask somebody that you know is a collector for a second opinion.
Sure.
I have learned so much from my peers, older gentlemen in the collecting field, and everybody. We all love to talk about our toys, just like guys with hot rods and Harleys.
Mm-hmm.
We all love to talk about our toys, and once you get acquainted and get familiar with some of the people that are out there, you can learn a lot just from word of mouth.
Yeah. So are there any associations you belong to?
I belong to the Antique Toy Collectors Association of the United States, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the the shows that they have? You mentioned you went to a show.
There's an amazing show in Boston, probably one of the, and that's usually actually December. It's coming right up. I think it's the week before Christmas they have it. And but the best one for me is in Rochester, New York, and it's called The Rats, and that's the Rochester Antique Toy Show, and it's world renowned. I mean, people come from the four corners of the world, if you want to say the world's four corners, but they come from Asia, Europe, everywhere, United States, all over the United States, and it's an education in itself. And then if you're in the New York metro area, there's a really good one. It's at in Atlantic City, and it's called Atlantic Toy Show. And that's becoming, that's got a much, much stronger following than it used to have. But and then there's another amazing one in Chicago that I've been to once, but that's way out of my price range.
Now, would you say to a person out there, is it safe buying on the internet?
Yes. Yeah. I don't buy on eBay as much as I used to, but back when eBay first started, when it was four numbers that were prefixed by a letter. So basically you had a letter and four numbers, and that was the catalog number for the toy on the eBay site. I got some amazing
toys. So you're talking about when it very first started?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I've heard all kinds of stories about some of the things that it's not going to happen anymore. But, you know, there's so many things on there at one time.
Yes.
That it's still, things can still slip through.
Exactly. There's always going to be a piece that a person has, whether they are an antiques dealer, a toy dealer. Nobody knows everything.
That's right. Yeah.
So to me, it's the joy of the hunt. The adrenaline rush is going out and seeing that toy and getting that heart race and saying, oh my God, this is amazing. It's getting less and less, but it still happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, are there people out there that know that you collect and contact you?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's nice.
I have people in Europe that call me or email me. People all over the United States that have my contact information and know exactly what I'm looking for, especially with my Japanese space toy collection, and they'll call me or email me and say, "Hey, listen, we have this particular toy. Are you interested?" And more often than not, if I can afford it, it's mine.
Well, you've been so gracious to do this interview. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to put your email link on the podcast. So if you go to our podcast website, which is antiqueauctionforum.com, to this podcast, just below it will be a little click link that will open up an email to you. So if someone has a piece of Japanese space item, something they want to ask a few questions on, can they do that?
Yes, sir.
All right, great.
Yes.
So this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed very much talking about my toys.
All right, thanks so much. So this is Martin Willis with Noel Swift, and we're signing off.
Hello again. While you are on our website, antiqueauctionforum.com, please stop by the forum message board. Click on the community tab at the top of the menu bar, and you can join in on a topic, post your own website links, and do a lot more. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed today's show.